Wake up!
Wake up!
Mike Mulligan, David Haw.
The Rams may have a talent deficiency. They may not be as talented as the Bears, but they are better coached, and they have a better head coach.
He's a stud.
Than the Bears have, and that's an a priori fact. That's not taking shots at people based on the first three games of the year.
This is our third game, and there was some positivity to take out of this, and we're encouraged.
What we're talking about is a coaching deficit. And when you're going into playing the Rams at home at Soldier Field, I don't care what the line is. If you have a coaching deficit, that can be difficult to overcome.
The first thing we have to do is honor the football. Overall, it's just got to be better. We got to do a better job as a team, honoring the football.
Start your mornings with Mully and Haw, 5:30 till 10 a.m. on 670 The Score.
You guys are the greatest thing on sports radio.
Let's go.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Made it till Friday. Sox have staved off infamy thus far.
Morning, Mully. Yes, we did make it to Friday. Happy Friday. And the White Sox have avoided making history at home like we talked about yesterday. Good for them. Three in a row. Take that winning streak to Detroit, and they don't have to
make that history.
Well, it's not.
History.
They aren't going to be able to avoid it, I don't think. A sweep seems unlikely given how well the Tigers are playing, but they did not have to deal with that at home, and give them credit for finding a way with Chris Flexen on the mound. They went with Flexen, and he won a game. Good for him.
Pitched well.
Yeah, he did pitch very well. And it was a fun little story this week as national media descended onto the South Side to kind of cover a major league record for losses in a season that hasn't yet been set, but it seems imminent over the weekend in Detroit. So the White Sox now go to Detroit playing the Tigers, and they will set the record likely in front of the manager they should have hired and the broadcaster they ran out of town.
Wow. This is the Benetti revenge.
But that's,
forgot about that one.
Yeah. They begin the season against the Tigers, they end the season against the Tigers. Wasn't that the first game? Because that was the big deal. Jason Benetti was back in the South Side. But the Tigers are still one victory away from clinching a playoff spot,
yes,
which is remarkable in itself.
Something to play for.
Given how they have come from where they were early August when they were in Chicago for like a week, right? Remember when they were like a week? They played the Cubs. They played the Sox.
When was that?
Javi Baez was here, and then he got hurt. Actually, the Tigers' record since Javi went on the IL would be an interesting number.
That was earlier in the month, right?
Early August.
Yeah. I thought you were talking about the beginning of the season. I was like, I don't remember that at all. Yeah, I'll tell you what. I mean, I was bummed yesterday that the Cubs didn't play. I went looking for them at one point, and then I remembered, oh, that's right, they have an off day. And I thought, wow, they got one more series left, and then they got an off for the rest of the year. And I wasn't happy about it. I like baseball season. I know we got the playoffs. I know we'll dig in and we'll have fun with that. It's just,
did you watch the Sox game then? Did you watch?
I did.
With suspense? Were you wondering if it was going to happen there?
I wouldn't say suspense. I was running around, so I was monitoring it. And then I got home and watched the end of it, and I watched the post game.
I think when you look at Chris Flexen, and I thought they should have started Crochet, who starts today against the Tigers, but Chris Flexen, you have to be happy for. He went 23 starts without a victory. 23 starts without his team winning with him on the mound. That's a record. So for him to have one last enjoyable moment to kind of put this season behind him, hopefully, that was a good thing.
It was good for him.
Yeah.
It was good for him to win a game. It probably, you would hate to go into an off season not having won a game since May, right? Wouldn't that just burn you? So it's good for him. They had we'll always have that fifth inning. We'll always have that forever. They had a fifth inning outburst. And did I read on Twitter from Sean Anderson? We'll have to look into this one. I don't know if it's true, that he needed to get to 160 innings to get a bonus, like a $250,000 bonus. And by virtue of going six and a third, he got his bonus.
Well, that's good.
Isn't that great?
That's good because if that is the case, then the White Sox did not do what the Pirates did.
Yes.
With Rowdy Tellez and make sure that he didn't get a $200,000 bonus, which is the epitome of a cheap franchise.
Right.
And it's not the way you make friends and improve your reputation. So good for the White Sox if that's the case. Sean Anderson, CHGO, I think he was.
CHGO.
Yeah, put that out there. I also thought it was interesting.
Sean used to work here.
Yep. Big Sox fan.
Yes.
Yep. Does a nice job. And the attendance now, finally, not that the last game is over at guaranteed rate, 1.38 million fans. It's an average of 17,928 per game.
Yeah.
Not enough.
No, but I mean.
Not enough. But look, understandable given the circumstances of the season.
Yeah.
Tough watch all season long. Tough to talk about all season long.
And, it does amuse me, knowing some friends that went out there, that the people that went just to see them lose were disappointed.
Well, I think.
I don't know why that
I think that's the reality
that,
of
that
it.
It's funny.
And
Sox
I think.
Sox can't even win when they're. You know, they can't even lose when you want them to.
There are some players who I think were. Spoke to that, and I think Grady Sizemore and Garrett Crochet alluded to that when their comments before and after the game, and I can understand how that would not sit well in a clubhouse that basically has endured a lot of losing and probably didn't care for the fact that when the Angels homered, people cheered the day before.
It'd be tough. That's rough, but it's the bed that they made, and they're now lying in it, and maybe they didn't make it. Maybe it was ownership or management. Whatever way you want to look at it, maybe the players aren't to blame. But I think that I can't really get down on all the people that wanted them to lose. I just you wanted to be a part of history. There is a part of me that was very amused, though, that it didn't.
Oh, happen. I'm sure that's part of it. And I think we learned a long time ago in this business, you don't tell people. How to fan,
feel.
Yeah.
Yeah,
how to be a fan and what to feel when they go out there and they buy a ticket, however little they paid for it.
Yeah.
However little they paid for it on the whatever internet website you went to, because you could get in for probably less than $10 this week.
Oh, easily.
At any time. I also thought it was interesting to see a little pushback from Garrett Crochet about that. Some pride they were taking in the final series of the season at home. You heard that from Grady Sizemore. So to give the Sox a little credit for winning three in a row. It's the first time they've done that all year long, right?
I think that matches their season
matches
high.
Matches the season high?
Yep.
Big day on the South Side began with Steve Stone announcing he's coming back for another season at least, a multi-year contract extension for Stoney in the booth. That's great for all Sox fans who enjoy.
Speaking of all the emotions of the day, this one brings a lot of joy to a lot of White Sox fans. Excited to announce that my incredible partner, Steve Stone, will be back on this broadcast, not just next year, but for multiple years to come, signing a new agreement with the White Sox to end his role with the analyst for whenever you want it to end with the Chicago White Sox.
Yeah, I mean, that was the plan because since I've been here, since 2008, it has felt like a family to me. And so I wanted to make sure that when my career is over, it ends as a member of the Chicago White Sox family. So we did sign a long-term deal. I will be here for quite some time, and John and I will be together for as long as we both want to, I believe.
Wow.
Strong words from Stoney. Will he be walking away from the White Sox? No. Because? No.
Well,
good for him. I think everybody's happy about that.
Yeah, I think so, too.
Yeah.
I think it's great.
There's very you can sense that he wanted to return in spite of how challenging it can be to watch the same thing happen night after night after night. So that was Stoney before the game. Also, Garrett Crochet. Garrett Crochet had some interesting things to say. He wants to endorse Grady Sizemore. He also said he'd be open to a contract extension. We expect him to be traded in the offseason. He's pitching today, and he's a guy that whose voice I wonder what his input, how it's taken, if it matters. Not necessarily in the managerial search, but when he says open to an extension, are the White Sox as open as Garrett Crochet sounded to signing him?
I'd be receptive. That, you know, those kind of conversations aren't they're not, I guess, like, reliant on myself. You know, whatever happens, I know that Getz does everything with the team's best interest in mind. So I think that we can trust that to remain true.
Would you go as far as to ask Getz or lobby for him, or is that not your thing?
I would put my name behind Grady.
So if it matters, Garrett Crochet has weighed in.
If he wins the next three games, give him the job. That's all
really?
You got to do. Win the next three, you get the job.
So if they sweep the Tigers, you are behind Grady Sizemore in
Grady
2025.
Sizemore. They're not going to pay for a manager. This guy's come in. If they sweep and they get – and this, again, a Detroit team with something to play for. If they can sweep them or even if maybe whatever storms in Florida floats over to Detroit, if they could rain out Sunday – all they got to do is win two and then pray for rain.
Win
right?
two, yeah, and then get the third game canceled.
I think I take it.
Grady Sizemore has endeared himself to players because they respect his playing background. Crochet mentioned that a couple times, and you've heard it from other players. They respect the fact that he's played at a high level, and that carries some weight in the clubhouse. He's got some learning probably to do on the job. It's hard to hold the record against him given the talent deficit on a nightly basis, but I think you're right in terms of if they're not going to pay for a celebrity manager or a name guy with experience because they're going to be losing close to 100 games next year, they could do worse.
Yeah. I mean, listen, I'm not endorsing him like that, but I'm just saying if they end up they end the season a six-game winning streak. Keep the guy. Who cares?
Yeah, I'm mixed about that. I think we'll wait and see who else is in the mix, who else is a candidate and who they're pursuing. I will say one thing about less ambiguous. Even though I respect that rebuilds, you have to get prospects, and Garrett Crochet is your best asset.
Yes.
I'd be okay if they kept him. If they're willing to change the way they do business and extend Garrett Crochet and be willing to sign him to a long-term contract, even though there's risk involved, even though we know all of the realities of that in the past, I would be okay with that because I think you've got to start somewhere.
I think that they will trade him. I believe they will trade him, and I believe he'll have a great career once they trade him. I believe that he probably is a Cy Young candidate once he's on another team. If he stays here, if they re-sign him, then I believe he'll never be a Cy Young candidate.
Wow. Never is a strong word.
No, I just don't think they're going to be good enough. They're going to give him enough run support. I think for a guy like him, he'd be better off going elsewhere and getting a first-class seat. And maybe he already gets one, but nonetheless.
Taking the Chris Sale route to baseball fame
baseball,
and fortune.
Baseball
and a legacy,
a championship.
Chris Sale's had quite a legacy. He's going to win Cy Young in the National League.
Yes, he is.
He's got a World Series with the Boston Red Sox, and he started with the White Sox. And he was traded, and it began the first version of a rebuild back in 2016. I hope Garrett Crochet stays, but I do agree that wherever he goes, he will be a valid, legitimate Cy Young candidate at some point in his career. I don't know if it'll be next year. But he does have that kind of stuff. I hope that he eases into or adjusts to being a starting pitcher every fifth day that can give you at least five innings. That's the thing about what's been frustrating about this year, for in addition to the other, you know, dozens of reasons. But you've seen him in glimpses, especially since the All-Star break. 3-4 innings at a time.
Yeah.
How many is he going to go today?
Four? Well,
I
have a friend who said that what they should do is they should tell the manager that he will be the manager if they win the series. And then he should pitch Crochet in all three games. Just one time he's got like a fake beard on, one time he's got a mustache, and just throw a name on the back of his jersey because half the guys you don't really know anyway. So they just brought some guy up. Oh, look. His name is Fisk now, and he's wearing number 72. And he's got those funny glasses on. Boy, Fisk is an oddball. I was laughing so hard. I love the idea. It was fun on Twitter to see the Birmingham Barons win the Southern League. Did you catch that? They got the hit at the end of the game. They won the Southern League championship, and they celebrated like they had won a championship. It was a wonderful thing
to
see.
That's good. That's for the organization. That's a good thing.
And Sergio Santos,
yes,
is the manager there, said he'd throw his hat in the ring.
He'd like a shot. He'd like to be heard from.
Yeah.
I'd give him an interview.
It would be an honor to get an interview.
I think he should get an interview. Why would the Sox not interview him? What would be the compelling reason? Plus, it is good for morale organizationally to at least see what he has to say and how he presents himself. You don't have to necessarily hire him. But yeah, if I have a double-A manager who won a championship in his first season in the dugout.
And if you once were the guy that came up with the Birmingham Project, how do you not interview the Birmingham manager?
You've got to do that. Yeah, you've got to do that. I thought that was pretty cool. And good for them. You know, they do have some bright spots. I think it's probably a few years away from any kind of potential celebration for the White Sox. You look at that division, and when is that going to come back to them? When is that going to be a gap they close? The Tigers, playoffs. Royals, Guardians. The Twins, we thought all season long were going to be in the playoffs. That division suddenly got very, very good. When did that happen? Is it because they play the White Sox?
I think that's part of it. I think when you have a doorstop team, you're assured a certain number of victories. Now, it's not like the loaded schedule that it used to be.
Mm-hmm.
So it's changed a little. But you still play them, and it does help, and it does, you know, give you a little bit of a boost.
It would be very funny, though, if the White Sox did beat the Tigers 3 in a row this weekend. It would just be so hilarious.
You know, I got to say, the Anaheim Angels are god-awful. Like, even in the postgame, they were kind of conceding that might be the worst team in baseball. They might be worse than the White Sox.
They've gotten worse over the course of the season?
Oh, yeah.
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 And I could see that.
At this point, they're just really bad. And the Sox played well yesterday. That's probably the best baseball they've played. But your second baseman, Lopez, had another drop ball. I mean, he was playing short, and I think it was a grounder to short, and he couldn't handle it, and that led to the big inning, right? They gave him an extra out in that inning. I mean, listen, they helped the White Sox sweep that series, and that's not a shot at anybody. That's just the reality of it. And Detroit is trying to get to the playoffs, and they're a significantly better team.
No, that's no doubt about it. You're right. Meanwhile, the Yankees celebrated. The Dodgers celebrated. Michael Kopech on the mound when they clinched the division. Eesh.
Yeah.
So
that's going to happen.
That's going to happen.
Someone to the Dodgers.
And that's probably not the first time the Dodgers will celebrate with Michael Kopech on the mound. You can envision him being on the mound for a clincher in whatever level of the playoffs they are at and continue to progress. I think this could be, I know we're not making our playoff picks. It's hard to see the Dodgers and pick against them given the Ohtani factor.
Begin everything. Tuesday? Will we make them Monday or Tuesday?
Tuesday morning.
Okay. Because we got Bears fallout.
Yeah, I think we don't want to mess around with Monday. We'll be talking about whatever we're going to be talking about. I think I know what we're going to be talking about
coaching.
On Monday morning.
We'll be talking about coaching.
We will be talking about coaching Monday morning.
One way or another.
One way or another. Because if the Bears find a way to beat the Rams, it will be because they closed the gap in the coaching deficit that exists. And this is a wide one on Sunday.
Yeah.
We saw some of that yesterday.
Yes, I would say.
Pivoting to Bears. That was a afternoon that should have
didn't engender a ton of enthusiasm or confidence. Let's put
probably shook your confidence a little bit.
A little bit.
And I'm not just talking about fans. It sounds like, and we'll hear from players, but yes. Mercedes Lewis, as honest as they come, I guess he's in the locker room and on this roster to tell the truth. that's his purpose.
Then I suspect he won't last the season.
Maybe not. But they're going to have to replace him as captain. They voted him captain. They celebrated him being a captain. Hey, captain. You're talking a little too much. I can imagine that being the message from the coaching staff yesterday when he talked about, we'll get to it at the pick six, but
yeah.
I think he raised some questions from my perspective that I wonder what the players are thinking when the coaches are not.
I think we've raised those questions, but it's totally different if a player is talking about it. We've wondered about competency and relationships and how you're handling yourself. To hear it from players, totally different
deal. Well, go back to Monday when Jalen Johnson was on the Spiegel and Holmes show. And when he talked about how important this game is before they kind of lose, unless they lose their way. And then you follow some of the conversation throughout the week, and you hear from Caleb Williams talking about communication being an issue and where that is with the coaching staff, and you wonder about that. And then Mercedes Lewis dropping the hammer yesterday, talking about coaches can't walk on eggshells, and they're all dudes in there, and this isn't Pop Warner. That's indicting on the entire staff, beginning with Matt Eberflus, but spreading throughout his entire assistant coaching staff, and that's not something you want to hear from a veteran.
Yeah, I think, unfortunately, and I'm not being mean about it, but I think last year Eberflus got the chance to fire coaches. I don't know that he gets that opportunity again.
Well, he's not firing anybody. This I can't imagine.
Well, I'm saying in the offseason.
Oh, yeah, well.
So I'm saying if this goes the wrong way, I think this has to work, is what I'm saying, for Matt and his future.
Yeah, I don't think there's any doubt about that. Yeah. And the fact that
– big game, important game.
Mercedes Lewis was as vocal as he was, mm-hmm. I think makes Sunday feel a little bigger. Even though it's just week four, it's still September. But there's a coaching deficit, as I've referred to it, but a credibility issue, I think, with the coaching staff – and the players, are they all in? Are they buying into this? Doesn't sound like they have enough evidence yet to say yes.
Well, there is a lot to talk about regarding the Bears, and we're going to get to it in the pick six. We've mentioned the end of the baseball season, and that's fascinating to see. There are some great college football games this weekend. Some big marquee matchups that will have an impact on the season, and we will discuss that as well. There's a lot to get to.
Also, a very surprising story late Thursday night. The Chicago Sky fired Teresa Witherspoon as their coach after one season. So all this stuff about the direction of the Sky and how they straightened things out and all of this and that, and they had a good draft. They did. But you start to wonder, one and done?
And Angel Reese kind of pouring her heart out on Twitter last night. Very interesting to read some of that stuff. One and done. And again, like they went 3-13 after the All-Star break. It's not like they were kind of the anti-Indiana Fever, right? Where the Fever kind of won all these games and made a playoff push. Their playoff, by the way, is over. And that's what happens when you're dealing with young players, but the young players in Chicago get a new coach now. So it's going to be really interesting. I think we talked about that organization a little bit, and we wondered about if they put the team together well enough and were they missing. It was almost like the Bulls conversation about three-point shooting.
Yeah.
And then you go ahead and fire the coach over that?
Well, I'm not going to pretend to be an expert on their style of play.
Right.
And as much as we talk about the Bulls, I think we see them more. With the Sky, I just know this. When you're looking for stability in a franchise, searching for your fourth coach in 2 years is not a good way to say that you're a stable franchise.
Fair enough.
And also, when your star player already went to Twitter or social media to pretty much say that she's heartbroken by the coaches, you know, leaving.
Yes.
And Angel Reese did that. Yeah.
She did. So apparently not consulted in this one.
Will she be consulted in the search for the fourth coach in the 2 years?
I
don't know.
Yeah. I would say trending no, based on not talking to her about firing the coach. But we'll get into all of it. We've got the pick six next. We'll tear apart all the stories of the day. It's Mully and Haw on the Score.
It's Pick Six with Mullion Haw, where we debate the top six sports stories of the day and then open it up to you, the Chicago sports fan. Call us at 312-644-6767, or you can tweet your thoughts at Mully Haw. Pick Six with Mullion Haw starts now.
Pick Six, sponsored by Affinity Whole Health. Do what I do. Visit FeelGreatIllinois.com to learn more about their testosterone therapy or their weight loss options. Again, FeelGreatIllinois.com. What did you make of the OC for the Bears, Shane Waldron's media session on Thursday? Specifically, how about what he had to say about running the ball out of the shotgun near the goal line? The Bears have had 9 plays inside the 5-yard line this season, all 9, 6 runs, 3 passes out of shotgun.
I think when you're in the shotgun in the low red zone there, you obviously present the option of the quarterback to run it right there. You know, I know that when it comes down, everyone will want to talk about it and ask about it. The fourth down call right there where it didn't work out after we had some interior runs. You know, I know for me, you know, I can't look back at the past in that negative light. I got to look back in the past and live in the present, be better for us, learn from it, and improve there. But in terms of being in the gun versus being under center, you know, there's different styles of both. And I know when you present that extra element, because in the low red zone, defense has that extra hat down there, quarterback in the gun now presents that opportunity.
What did you make of that?
Well, it was rambling. I understand that he had to get into the fourth down play. I think if you take that out, what he said was very revealing, just in terms of the way that he's looking at the game of football. The fact that they have run out of the shotgun as many times as they had in that element makes you understand that he believes the threat of a quarterback run is going to slow down the defense. That's what he's looking for. But they didn't run the quarterback. But that's what he believes will prevent the defense from being able to load up and just sort of that quarterback RPO at inside the five makes the quarterback more dangerous, makes teams, puts them off balance. That's what he's saying. When he talked about the fourth down thing and living in the present and living in the moment, he did say that he has to be better at that. He also said when he said he had to be better at that, he was referring to something that Caleb Williams talked about at the in the post game. Caleb Williams was asked if he could check out of that play, and he said he could, but he said he got the play late, and by the time they broke the huddle, they were lined up before, and it was either you try to check out of the play, and you're going to have a delay of game. And he thought it was better to run the play. So I think when he says he's got to be better, I don't think that has anything to do about operating under center. I think it has to do with getting the play in earlier so that the possible check out is available to the quarterback rather than having him at the line of scrimmage with time winding down trying to get the ball snapped for a play that was doomed to fail. And that's kind of what Eberflus said when he said we like that play and if it was set up right, it would have worked. It wasn't set up right. They didn't have enough time to check out of it, and the play was a disaster. But I guess what I'm saying is Shane Waldron is a guy that likes to run out of the shotgun and feels the element of the quarterback on an RPO will slow down the defense, which certainly has yet to happen.
How many RPOs have we actually seen when the quarterback's actually taken off with the ball? Not nearly enough. I mean,
not maybe, enough to set up that play.
Right, yeah. Exactly right. So you can say all that, but until your quarterback is willing to put his body on the line, and I guess Caleb's not willing to do that. I mean, I appreciate the fact that he's throw first and not run first. But again, I know I keep harping on that play and the hunting for field goals. I guess the Giants were hunting for field goals last night, if all those field goals the Giants kicked on Thursday Night Football. But I was happy to hear Shane Waldron say that on the failed fourth and one that I have to be better. So good. I'm glad he can admit that he has to be better.
Why is anybody talking about Caleb Williams as a runner? I don't understand how that became part of the conversation or why. So there will be a lot of, and there already has been, a lot of attention paid how Shane Waldron delivered what he said, and a lot of focus on the style and the inelegant clumsiness, whatever you want to use to describe it. I don't want to get caught up in that. I think the mockery is unsavory. It's not really productive either or professional. I do think the substance of what he said was more troubling to me, because I don't know where this is coming from, that Shane Waldron wants to make Caleb Williams into an RPO guy. Did I miss that? When did that happen? Because isn't the arm talent the thing? Isn't behind center the thing? Nine straight snaps out of the shotgun, and you're inside, you're in the red zone. That to me is an egregious failure of what you were supposed to do and why you were brought here.
You're in the low red zone.
You're within sniffing distance, and you're still going out of the shotgun. So when you talk about the identity and the Bears' lack of an identity 3 games into the season, we heard why. So the substance of what he said was troubling. The style is kind of irrelevant. You want to instill confidence, sure. You want to have composure, absolutely. That's more of a problem, I think, with the locker room and credibility than it might be outside of the locker room with us. But I just didn't hear anything that made you feel much better about the Bears' commitment to establishing an identity that makes sense here in Chicago. Given the talent, you need to devise your scheme and game plans around the talent you have, not the other way around.
Oh, boy, that's a tough question.
That's the voice of Brad Biggs, Biggs Time, 7 a.m. with Mully and Haw. How should we interpret Mercedes Lewis' comments about Shane Waldron that bring into question how authoritative the offensive coordinator really is?
So sometimes as a coach coming in, you may be walking on eggshells, and I just kind of put that to bed. Like, it's not – nobody's sensitive in here. You know, we want to win games just as bad as you do, and it's a collaborative effort in everything. This is not Pop Warner. You know, this is we work together side by side to get things done, and yeah, that's really what my message was.
So nobody should be walking on eggshells.
So if I'm interpreting this correctly, and I think that we are, Shane Waldron praised a meeting with the leadership committee that included Mercedes Lewis, who went in there and basically told his coach, Shane Waldron, to start coaching them, be tougher with them, stop tiptoeing around and being tentative, okay? This is a problem. This is a problem 3 games in. You don't want to be having these conversations 3 games into the season. Now, if it were anybody but a guy who's in his 19th NFL season and has had his share of coaching conversations and knows what leadership looks like and sounds like and knows what a competent offense looks like and feels like, it might not be as big of a concern. But when you're Mercedes Lewis, and the only reason, the biggest reason you were brought back to Chicago was because of your leadership, because of your know-how, and because of your example, then when you're sitting there in front of the other fellow leaders on your team telling the coach, the offensive coordinator, to stop walking on eggshells and to coach us like dudes, I don't know if the Bears are headed in the right direction as much as I was convinced they were 3 weeks ago, or maybe 8 days ago. What happened in Indianapolis shook the confidence of everybody in the organization and maybe the fan base. And I think we heard yesterday why that's not an exaggeration.
Hey, Mercedes, talk less, block more, know the snap count.
Well, that was well said.
I love that.
Yeah, I think... I look, the Shane Waldron thing is kind of a nightmare. It's shaking your confidence for a reason. Listening to him, he doesn't seem like he's brimming with confidence. He doesn't seem like he's got all the answers, and he doesn't seem like he has the respect of the players. So it's all a problem.
Yes. Hey, well, here's another question.
Voice of Mark Grody's here at 8:25 on Fridays to give us all the news and nuggets from up at Hallis Hall all week long. Plus, this might be something we talk about. How do you believe the Bears' offensive line will line up from left to right Sunday for the game against the Rams at Soldier Field?
I believe that they will line up exactly the same way as they did in the last game. I think that they're going to play the right tackle, Darnell Wright. I think he'll play. I think Matt Pryor is the new right guard. I think he'll play Coleman Shelton, Tevin Jenkins, and Braxton Jones. I know there are a lot of moving pieces and a lot of injuries connected to all those names, and guys cannot make it through an entire practice both days during the week, but I believe that's how they're going to line it up.
I agree with what Mully just said there. And hey, how about this? Nate Davis, a full participant on a Thursday practice. Good for you, Nate.
Well, if he's participating fully, then that means he's healthy.
Well, it means that, to me, it means that he's actually been kind of woken up a little bit.
Okay.
Right?
So
message sent, message received.
Well, if message is received, then I think that you need to start him again.
Over.
Yes.
Okay.
I think that if he is healthy enough, last week was okay. You had maybe an opportunity to use the injury as a crutch, but you could maybe kind of sort of, it sounds like they're wishy-washy in every message they send with the coaching staff, but you were kind of saying, well, in the ode to accountability, let's start Pryor over Nate Davis, but he's kind of hurt. This week, no, there's no question. If he's healthy, he's got to play. At some point, Nate Davis has got to be the guy that you're paying him all the money to be. So this is as good a week as any to start that process. You're going to need Matt Pryor at some point as backup depth
right.
to Darnell Wright
right.
at right tackle. Maybe the Braxton Jones at left tackle.
Yep.
I think Matt Pryor is your super
swing
sub.
Tackle.
He's yep. your sixth man, if you will, literally, but not in the sense like he's coming off the bench in basketball and shooting three-pointers. But he's a guy that can play three different roles. So Braxton Jones, Tevin Jenkins, Coleman Shelton against his old team. Give Nate Davis a start and hope that it's different because of the lesson hopefully he has learned. And then I think Darnell Wright is going to try to play through whatever pain and injury he's going through.
I could argue they should start Richard Matt Pryor and Bill Murray because the whole thing's going to be a comedy of errors anyway.
That would be a good line.
You know, that's a good question.
That's a good comment. That's a good question. And that's Ron Coomer, who is an overall great guy. He'll be here at 8 talking Cubs baseball. How do you explain the Bears suffering through a disastrous change in the injury report that we got on Thursday? Safety Kevin Byard out with a back. Wide receiver Rome Odunze limited with a hip. Defensive tackle Andrew Billings kind of unsung, downgraded with a knee, didn't practice. Keenan Allen still limited with the heel, but right tackle Darnell Wright, he got up there, upgraded from out to limited with that back.
Yeah, he's limited with the back, and if they go Mully's route and they have to go with Richard Pryor and Bill Murray, I think everyone would be a little stir crazy. I don't know if this injury issue is as different from other teams. It just is the NFL. I mean, yeah. There are some prizes on there, but I didn't do a deep dive into what the Packers are dealing with. They're without their starting quarterback still. Or how about the Lions? Are they banged up? Probably. Every team is going to
the
be banged
Rams.
Up. Look at the Rams. The Rams are coming to town without their top two wide receivers who would be Pro Bowl caliber players and are, but they're missing. The Vikings are doing it without who? So it's like people want to make a big deal in whatever locality they're at because their team is banged up, but it happens in every NFL city. I'm most concerned about the names on this list. Kevin Byard, at this age, he doesn't miss time. So him being on there, maybe we shouldn't worry, or is it the time that maybe we should start to? I worry about Andrew Billings because he is somebody who was downgraded in that knee issue for a man that big.
And Zach Pickens is hurt, right? I'm not that they're comparable, but that's the backup.
They're not comparable, but I think Andrew Billings is indispensable, and that's why you worry about him popping up there. And Keenan Allen, that's going to be an ongoing conversation because he is 33 years old, and he has yet to really contribute in a meaningful way. So until he's off the injury list, I think we're going to wonder how much he's being limited by the injury.
Yeah, the two names that stick out the most is Andrew Billings being put on this list. They need Andrew Billings if they want to win on Sunday. And again, Keenan Allen, limited. Again, he knows what he's doing. Does he need to be out there? But is he building a rapport with Caleb Williams? Is Caleb Williams willing to get him the ball when they haven't played a whole lot of catch in practice together?
I can't wait until you tell off Keenan Allen the way you told off Mercedes Lewis.
Jump off sides, Keenan, and you can also endure the wrath.
I... I got to tell you, like, there are three names on here that are disturbing, and they're the three new names, right? Keenan Allen, limited, that's expected. Roma Dunze, limited, that's a new one. I thought they were taking extra practice time. I thought they had the 10 extra plays. If you're limited, you can't do that, right? But you are so right. Andrew Billings is the most unsung essential player on the roster. And he's the guy that you must have in order to be able to play good defense for the Chicago Bears. They really need him healthy. He's the guy that forced the fumble when they need it. I mean, he makes a ton of really good plays and is a really important player. If he's out, the drop-off is like a cliff, for God's sake. And Kevin Byard, that's a new name. That's a guy, as you mentioned, who never misses time, is always available. Now we can't practice in the middle of a week on game week. I mean, I don't know what that means, but that's a bothersome one. And anyone who has back injuries or ever been through a back injury, your back locks up on you, you're of no value to anyone. I mean, it's a really difficult thing to deal with. So that was really upsetting to see. Again, I think the Billings was like the spit take, where you're, you know, sitting down and, oh, let's see what's happening. That one will stop you cold.
Oh, my God, what a question.
That's the voice of Joe Fortenbaugh. He'll be here right around 7:40. Get the pencil out, get the paper out. Prediction time. Could you please pick one of the three big games in college football? Louisville, Notre Dame, Illinois, Penn State, Georgia, Alabama, and make one prediction. Which of the three will have the biggest impact on the national title chances, and which team can most impact its chances with a victory?
This is a good question because those are big games. I'm going to go, and I know this is a mistake, I'm going with Alabama winning at home. Alabama is, believe it or not, 5-1 at home against Georgia, which I had to double-check that statistic because it feels like Georgia has had their number, and I think it's really interesting that there's no Nick Saban, and here's Kirby Smith, and what a shock. Wait a minute, who are you? And Kalen DeBoer, this is kind of his coming out party. He wants to get the ball down the field. He's got a quarterback that can do it. He's got a young receiver that can do it. Georgia, as good as they are, might not be the entity that they were. And this could be a real chance for Alabama, so I'll take Alabama. I like Notre Dame, I like Illinois to cover, and I like Alabama to win.
Yeah, Alabama, Mully, to your point, they're getting a point and a half at home, so if you do like Alabama, maybe you go money line or take the point and a half, or wow, even do what I love to do is a teaser and move that thing up to over a touchdown. So that's a game that you're really going to want to watch. Of course, I'm really interested in the Notre Dame game. They don't deserve, they're not a team that should be playing in the national championship tournament at the end of the year, at least at this point. The quarterback totally overvalued. Maybe the coach is the problem. Maybe he's overvalued. Notre Dame's a hefty favorite too in this game, which I'm surprised, according to our friends over at Circus Sports Illinois, just shot a touchdown right now. -7 Notre Dame as I'm checking it as we're doing this. Notre Dame -7 against Louisville, I don't like, but Notre Dame's got the most to lose. If they lose this game, they're done. I think Georgia and Alabama could survive a loss if it's a close game. And listen, Illinois could ruin Penn State's season with a win. But the game that I'll be most watching from my fandom standpoint is Louisville-Notre Dame at Notre Dame.
Yeah, I understand that. Georgia-Alabama definitely has the makings, though, of being the best and most impactful game in college football this weekend for obvious reasons. I think the winner will go into third place in the NFC South. I mean, they could be that good this year. But Georgia will go into Tuscaloosa and win. Kirby Smart has his team playing, understanding what is at stake. I don't think it's the same Alabama team. The Saban factor, yeah, I think that can't be overlooked, especially with this group of players. Might take a season to get used to some things. That's not a criticism of DeBoer. I think he's a tremendous coach, but he's changing a lot of things. And you think that Jalen Milroe is a tremendous tremendous college football quarterback. I just don't know if they're going to be able to beat Georgia in this setting and under these circumstances. So that's going to be the biggest national game. I would like to see Notre Dame hold off Louisville. I don't have a lot of confidence in their ability to play at that high of a level at home. For whatever reason, Notre Dame, and this goes back a long way now. I just feel like there's Notre Dame football games tend to be like museum tours, and the fan base is there for it's a destination place. It doesn't have the same kind of atmosphere that you're going to see in Tuscaloosa or maybe in some Big Ten settings, the Big House or Penn State maybe. I just don't always sense that is going to be is not as big of a home field advantage as it should be historically. And I always wonder why. I don't have a lot of faith in Marcus Freeman this week. So I think Notre Dame will win, but I don't think it'll be impressive. And Illinois will make it competitive, but I think that's a tough challenge to go into State College and to beat that team.
They 18 may, and a half?
They may cover. I think they will cover, but I don't think that they're going to win.
This will be a pick six. There's your ball game.
All right, what do you think of the news overnight? Sky firing coach Teresa Witherspoon after just one season. How much of the early season momentum and then interest remained in the Sky franchise that arguably keeps getting harder to like? Did they ask Angel Reese before they did this?
Apparently not, because of her reaction implies that this was a surprise to her and a disappointment. I think that it would be disingenuous of me to come off as some sort of Chicago Sky expert, not having watched most of their games and not being somebody that has been that invested emotionally in what's going on over there. That said, I have respected the fact that it's created some excitement in Chicago. There is a fan base that is growing, but I don't think they've taken advantage as a franchise of the goodwill, especially in this season, which is 2024, the year of women's basketball. And I just don't think they've seized the opportunity well enough. It's a hard team to watch. Because it's hard to like and embrace. They seem to like and lean into the villain role. That's okay. But I think first you have to be successful to be vilified and to take pride in that. Firing Teresa Witherspoon late on a Thursday night seems as clumsy as everything else that they have done in the past 6 months or so. They're going to announce it officially today. They've got issues with players wanting traded. They've got issues with attracting free agents. Now they've got an unhappy superstar in Angel Reese. They've got a lot of problems. I don't know how they solve them, and I don't know what they're missing with Teresa Witherspoon, because they did not have a very good season in the final analysis, so maybe she did have to go. But hiring and looking for your fourth coach in 2 years, not a way to establish stability.
The franchise, apparently, after reading the Sun Times this morning, Annie Constable's story, she's been a guest of yours a couple of times on the Sky. She is a Sky expert. They just can't attract free agents. People don't want to come to this organization and play here. Not 100% sure why. They keep burning through the coaches. Also, it's saying that on the exit interviews, players didn't like the idea that they changed playing style throughout the year. So there wasn't an identity, right? We're talking about the Bears and not having an offensive identity. Apparently, the Sky didn't have an identity. And we'll have to wait and see. Angel Reese is a lightning rod. And if she really feels this strongly about this, I'm really curious how negatively this could affect other free agents coming to play here and her just counting the days until she can get the hell out of here.
Didn't she just say earlier this week that she took pride in being a recruiter for free agents?
That was on her exit interview, right?
Well, that's
her exit Zoom with
reporters. So now, does that change because they fired her coach?
Have to wait and see.
Yeah, I mean, listen, it was really, it's a surprising story. I didn't know she was in trouble. I'm like you, David. I watched a few of their games. I didn't watch the entire season, but they totally, they definitely created interest this year. I was kind of trying to keep up with what they were doing. I think it's kind of strange that they got rid of the coach without knowing any of the bad. I didn't see this one coming, I guess, is what I'm trying to say. It seems like it's, if I had known that they were evaluating her in that way, and then maybe you look at the end of the year, maybe you have a different feeling. Like I said, 3-13 in the second half of the season. It's not like they did a They had a great year.
No, it's not.
But they did have some injuries.
They started strong, though.
They had some player movement. They were waiting on different people. And then, obviously, Angel Reese was not available at the end of the season. Her stuff on Twitter, I was floored by that. I was really surprised to see Angel Reese on Twitter. And then people are nitpicking her. She said, "I came here for you." And immediately there's a pushback. You came here because they drafted you. And that's true. They traded up to draft her. But it felt like they had flaws as a team from Jump Street, right? They did not have the scoring, the shooting that you would associate with what's needed with two young players inside that are getting rebounds and scoring points in the interior.
They're still there.
Yeah, I thought the roster flaws were as bad as any coaching flaws. And I'm not claiming that Teresa Witherspoon was the best coach in the league or anything like that. Obviously, they fired her for a reason. I just didn't see it coming.
I wonder if now Angel Reese's college coach, Kim Mulkey, becomes a candidate.
I wonder if she'd want her.
Dun, dun, dun.
Do you know that they have a relationship that would...
I don't. I'm just speculating. Yeah.
And
That's based on nothing, by the way. Okay. That's just because of the connection with Angel Reese.
But I also wonder about how college coaches do in the WNBA versus the NBA. College coaches have struggled coming from as much power as they
have. Yeah, I don't know the answer to that. I'm staying in my lane here. I don't know exactly if that's how big of a transition it is and if it's similar to the men's game where we have seen coaches struggle going from college to the NBA.
Yeah, so it's a different animal. Maybe. I don't know either, David. But you're the one pushing Kim Mulkey.
Yeah, I asked a question. It's a rhetorical one.
You played music. Dun, dun, dun.
Dun, dun, dun. For drama.
Okay.
I like drama. Dustin likes drama.
We've got the extra point. I think you got to know what it is at this point. We're going to make our declaration. We will declare. Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 to score.
Set up this extra point.
It's time for the extra point with Mully and Haw on 670 the score.
How do you see the coaching matchup football game going between the Bears and the Rams? Who wins, please, and predict the score? That would also be very appreciated.
All right, I don't like this game for the Bears. I think it comes at a bad time when they have had their own confidence shaken internally, as it seems. I'm not sure the players believe in this coaching staff. I think this is as big of a coaching deficit as they're going to run into on the schedule. You look at the Rams, and even though they are, as I think someone in the Sun-Times pointed out this morning, might have been Patrick Finley, they haven't won their last six games in the Central Time Zone. And they're going to be playing at 10 o'clock in the morning, according to their body clocks. But they still have, they don't have Cooper Kupp. They don't have Pua Akua. They don't have a lot of things. But they still have Matthew Stafford and Sean McVay. Look around the NFL. Find a better, more trusted collaboration of coach and quarterback. You can find one. You can find one. Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes. After that, I would challenge you to find one better and more trusted than this one. Maybe Jim Harbaugh, Justin Herbert. Maybe Sirianni and Jalen Hurts. I don't think that's a rift. So I don't think there's not a lot of other examples you'd look at and say you trust them to figure out how to get it done. And why do you say that now? Well, they just did in San Francisco against a 49er team they should have lost to. I don't think the Bears can close that gap this Sunday. I think that's too much to overcome. Matthew Stafford could meet his receiver on the team plane, and then they would celebrate on the flight back, five catches for 55 yards and a touchdown. This is a guy that doesn't need to know his receivers that well. He's a difference maker. McVay's a difference maker. Rams 23, Bears 20.
Oof. We'll start with this. Sean McVay greater than Matt Eberflus. That's, you know, the point spread between those two is probably two scores. If you said who's the better coach, probably a two score difference with the head coach of the Rams. Both offensive lines for both teams are big question marks. I believe the Rams are starting three rookie offensive linemen on Sunday. Because the game is at home, David, I've got a very similar score, but I've got Bears 24, Rams 20. If the Bears are going to win double digits, and it doesn't look like they're going to, this is a game you have to win if you're going to get to 10.
Yeah, this is a difficult one because of the coaching deficit. And I think that it's a gutsy pick to take the Rams here because I think that they're 0-6 in games in the Central Division, Central Time Zone, excuse me, over the last whatever couple of years. Last six games they played, they failed to win. But I kind of like them in this spot because of the coaching deficit. But having said that, I'm going to take the Bears to win the game 19-17.
Wow.
I took 19-17 a week ago the other way, and I'm turning it around again. Like that score.
Bears are going to get four field goals?
I think they're going to keep...
Or are they going to miss the two-way conversion because nobody could get on the field quickly enough? How are they going to get 19?
They're going to get 19 points.
All right. 19-17 Bears.
Yeah. Taking the Bears this week.
Well,
I just think this is the drop-dead moment of the season. If they lose a third straight game, there's going to be problems. I think you're right about the coaching deficit here. But we haven't even talked about the Rams missing three offensive line starters.
I know.
Three.
I'm aware. Aware.
I know.
I don't know how in the world they beat the 49ers, but they did. And when you watch part of those games as the access or the All-22, you can watch that. It's like, I don't know how they won that game.
Yeah.
Watching that game, I don't know how they won that game, but they found a way. And
he's changed his blocking scheme a little bit. Have you noticed that? It's really interesting to look at what he's doing. I think he's an unbelievable coach. I just think the Bears at home, if they get the defense up and running, they could really do some good things. They could just limit how many powerful points the opposition gets.
I legitimately hope you're right, and I hope that I'm wrong, because I think we all have this sense that if they fall to 1-3, there will be a feeling of here we go again. And I don't think any of us are ready for that or want that. And you don't root for teams when you're in this role necessarily. You can. It's fine if people want to. You just react to what's going on. And objectively, this would be a difficult season to watch unfold if they start 1-3 after going into the season with such high expectations and needing a fast start.
Yes.
And not getting one. They would raise all kinds of questions about every aspect of the operation.
I'll tell you what, they're lucky to have won one game. That is the reality of it. They had one game where they didn't turn the ball over, where they didn't burn needless timeouts, and they wound up winning that game on defense. That's kind of how they're going to have to win this one. And I don't know. Jeremy Fowler, is that the guy from ESPN, claims that that Roschon Johnson, he's either predicting it or claiming he's going to start the game. That they're going to.
It was a report slash prediction.
Yeah, it was a weird
one.
It's
kind of a.
I don't know what to make.
Tenuous
of it.
Report.
But it was maybe just him surmising something. I don't know
Makes
what
sense.
It was.
You should see more of Roschon Johnson.
But if you see more of Roschon Johnson, I think that's a good thing. I think they need to establish more of a running game, and they may be able to do that with him. And I just think that even though they gave DeAndre Swift $24 million over 3 years, I don't expect them to stay with what's been going wrong for them up to this point.
I think you have to trust the coaches to understand what opportunities they need to take advantage of and seize. But that's a big ask.
It
given,
is. It
given
is.
With the way we just saw the Bears squander that in Indianapolis. And I wonder if it's worth pointing out when we come back what Justin Fields had to say about the quality of coaching in Chicago and the quality of coaching he's receiving in Pittsburgh. Not that that's a terribly fair way to maybe look at it, but it's something that's out there now, Mully. We're talking about the coaching deficit, and I think it's worth probably addressing.
312-644-6767. It's Mully and Hall on the Score.
Coaching Pittsburgh or Chicago?
Pittsburgh.
Deficit. Come on.
Teammates Pittsburgh or Chicago?
Pittsburgh.
There we go.
That, of course, is the voice of Justin Fields. He was interviewed on a podcast. Which one was that? It was a good podcast. Yeah, the Not Just Football podcast.
Not Just Football.
Yeah. And it's Mully and Haw on the score. I'm a little disappointed that he's kind of playing to the crowd there.
Pandering.
Yeah.
I understand why he would do that. He's with a team that he's a leader of now. He's got teammates to worry about in terms of those relationships. And he has been coached well in Pittsburgh. They've gotten the most out of Justin Fields through three games. But yes, I think that all of us would like to think that if we move on and then we're asked about our previous stop, you'd take the higher road and not imply that you weren't coached well. Though this consensus is that he wasn't coached well here.
Yeah, and that's fine. He claims that the teams that were after him were the Raiders, the Ravens. Well, let's listen.
Who else was involved in the Justin Fields?
I'm not sure of all the teams, but, you know, there were a lot of teams that had already had, you know, solidified quarterbacks there, and I didn't want to do that. I think Chargers was one, Ravens was another.
Ravens? Yeah. Or Raiders?
Ravens.
Ravens.
Yeah. Raiders, they talked a little bit, and I don't know too much.
So, I mean, here's the thing. All those teams have quarterbacks, and all those teams, he'd be a backup. So they traded him to the best place for him to go, the place he wanted to go to. They traded him to the Steelers.
Mm-hmm.
And they did so for him. Oh, we got to do right by the kid. That's what Ryan Poles told us, the same guy that wept when he had to cut a player. I hope he learned the lesson. I hope that comment, you teach the lesson that you do what's best for the franchise. Who cares about whether this is a business? And whether it's a people business or what kind of business it is, you get the most you can get for the guy. And if he's going to sit behind the MVP in Baltimore or sit behind a good young quarterback in San Diego, get the most you can get.
Well, I wonder what those offers were, and I would hope that they would not be better than the one they took in Pittsburgh. If they were, and we have evidence of that, then I think it's worthy of the criticism. I don't know that it's ever a bad idea to do right by a player that has served your franchise well. I understand where he was coming from. I think when you hear from Justin Fields, it doesn't make me more disappointed in Ryan Poles. It makes me a little bit disappointed in Justin Fields. This feels a little bit like a victory lap. It's pretty early to start one. You shouldn't start the home run trot just yet. You're three games in to a season with a team where you're trying to reinvent yourself as a starting quarterback. You were traded from Chicago because you had a large part and a big hand in becoming the guy that was, you know, needed to be replaced or wasn't as good as the alternative. So I think it's a little disappointing on Justin Fields. I know what you're saying, but he does have a different constituency to serve. So I get he's talking up his new teammates, his new team, and he's being coached
and
well.
I get that. It just rubbed me the wrong way.
I understand that. But I think
just rubbed me the wrong
from
way.
A broader picture and perspective.
Because they did right by that guy.
They did. But I think that what it does is it reinforces some of these questions that we're discussing this week about the Bears coaching, Matt Eberflus and his staff. It's a bad time for Justin Fields to kind of take the lighter fluid and, you know, intensify the flames here, because it's the seat's getting hotter. And if you lose Sunday, Monday morning in Chicago is going to be an uncomfortable one for Matt Eberflus and Shane Waldron, depending on how you do it.
Well,
this doesn't help.
Here's what's not going to help. If you lose on Sunday and you come out with your usual kind of upbeat, we saw positives, no one else is going to see them.
Okay? You can't start 1-3 and cite positives.
No.
Or be encouraged about anything.
No.
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 Not in this division where everybody else got better.
Yes.
And they're starting to create some distance there. Now the Packers play the Vikings, so they're going to have
Somebody's
going to have an extra loss.
Right.
But you look at those.
What do you like in that game?
That's a great question. I was talking about this the other day. I really think that the Packers impressed me by the way they have won without Jordan Love.
Yes.
And I think that if they get Jordan Love back, and it looks like somehow he might play, that they would be the team that is hard to bet against. At home, in that environment, I know that Aaron Jones wants to do the Lambeau leap, and I have a lot of respect, ton of respect right now for the Vikings and the coaching staff and what they gotten out of Sam Darnold. But I just feel like in that environment, Packers are going to beat the Vikings.
I don't believe Jordan Love's going to play in that game. I'll be surprised if he does. And if they beat the Vikings with Malik Willis at quarterback, then just stop the season and give some sort of an award to the Flower.
I think the Flower would be worthy of that.
Yes.
Yes. Definitely.
First quarter.
Give him a rose.
Yeah.
He's the guy. He's the man.
Give him a rose.
He is the man if he can do this. And Molly, I'm not saying that I think it'd be naive to discount that possibility because of what we've seen him. This is what's great about Matt LaFleur in the last 2 weeks. And I know it's in Chicago and you don't want to compliment the Packers coach, but he has done what so many play callers are reluctant to do. He shelved his ego. He has made more out of less. The way that we talk about Craig Counsell did as a manager in Milwaukee, but Matt LaFleur has allowed Malik Willis to play within himself and not really forced the offense on him. And look at what's happened. That's a good coach. That's a smart play caller.
Yeah, it doesn't it choke you up saying it, though?
Hey, you're the one who complimented
I got to get that one out of my throat. It's like flower. A hairball.
You gave
with
him a nickname.
Cat.
The Flower. You refer to him so affectionately that way.
Oh, no, no. He's LeFleur.
LeFleur.
Yeah. That means, I just translated. He's the Flower. I got to read. Somebody has a book out on all of those coaches, all of the whole McVay tree and the San Francisco group and all that stuff. Be worth reading. Who's the former Chronicle writer, national sports writer, great guy, football guy. Tony is in Joliet. Hey, Tony.
Hey, guys. How you doing? Great show as always. Thanks for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I got to tell you guys, I've been watching the WNBA all year,
okay.
Especially with Caitlin Clark. But nobody would be surprised being a Sky fan, especially if you just look at the one thing that I look at the most, and if I was the only Sky that's disgusting, is we had Marina Mabry say, I want out of this team. And lo and behold, she goes to Connecticut. And if you would have watched the Connecticut-Indiana series, the only reason Indiana lost is because Mabry was unreal. She scored 20 points in the second half of the game one. And then game two, it was right down to the end, and Mabry hits an unbelievable three that pretty much ended the game. So I think Teresa Weatherspoon had a toxic culture. I think Angel Reese, you know, all the other players, you know, the exit interviews, you know, they saw it. Angel Reese is more about Angel Reese. You know, she's more about her than winning, because anybody could have seen that Teresa Weatherspoon, A, her in-game management was terrible, but just to see the way it went down and how depressing it was to see this team with so much promise. And now it's like, yeah, so no shocker at all with that. We need a lot more help on this team. I mean, man, they practice at the YMCA. So there's a lot that needs to change.
Thanks, Tony. Appreciate the phone call. The facilities remain an obstacle, and certainly all that you said, we'll trust and take your word for it. I'm not sure we watched it that closely. The other playoff series, I don't know if you did, Mully, but it sounds like the Sky just dealt with a lot of dysfunction throughout the season, and this is no surprise to people watching closely.
All right, we got Biggs time next. We're going to talk to our buddy Brad Biggs, the football man of the Chicago Tribune, and we'll get his selection for the game as well. It's Mully and Haw on the Score.